There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.
Hi, folks. Welcome to another episode of Film Study. This is Ken McCusick, and it's time for the first episode of the season of One Last Thing. Now, folks will remember that Slava Cooperstein did a fantastic job on this show last year, and we're sad to lose him, but between his work, which is very rewarding work, putting away sex offenders, basically, having a young family, he was not able to do it again. We have a split responsibility this year. So we're going to have Brad McGowan, who's a fan favorite and is often on for draft coverage and other things. And also Sean Asher, otherwise known as at Be More Sky High, will be joining as well. And a good friend and great analyst. Sean, thanks for joining us for this first episode.
It's an honor, man. I truly, truly enjoyed Slava's work. And when you said he was moving on, I was like, dude, those are huge shoes to fill. But man, if I could do that, I'd be so happy to help.
It is a lot of fun to do this show. Slava was a definitely a very good guy to do it with. But we're going to talk about a special episode, and one of the things that constantly plagues this team, and the Ravens don't have a good answer for this, because you can't fight this narrative until you actually beat it, and that is getting over the hump. And I think every Raven fan knows what that means here. It really means, I think, getting out of the AFC at the least in terms of the playoffs, making a Super Bowl. If they lost the Super Bowl, I'm sure that the yardstick would just be moved, but at least it would be progress to get past that. So far, you know, they have not been able to get past the AFC championship game with Lamar.
Yeah, absolutely. And while we were thinking about this, you know, truly, I believe it's like 80% will, like, do they have the will to get over this hump and do the things, and then 20% luck, and it's like injuries, the way the ball bounces. But, you know, if we're really sitting here thinking about it and trying to analyze what is different about this year that gives us some hope that this is the year to get over the hump, I think we got a good list.
Okay, I agree with by the way, the we have a list, and we're going to go over this in just a second, that it's some combination of will and luck. I actually think it's a lot more luck. That, you know, there have been things that have not gone well in the playoffs. The Ravens need to figure out how to improve their play, but they frankly have had the best roster in the entire National Football League the last 2 years. They've beaten the crap out of the very best teams to a degree no other team has done during the regular season. And during the playoffs, they just can't get out of their own way in terms of having some turnovers in particular that got them this last year at Buffalo, turnovers, also other mistakes in the game against Kansas City in 23. So a lot to get by, but let's talk about what it takes to get the Ravens over the hump. You start us off. We're going to come up with, we have six things we think could help this year. What's your number one thing?
The first thing that stood out to me about like what's different and what could help us get over the hump is in training camp, I'm hearing somewhat of a different level of accountability from the vets. You know, Marlon was at the podium, I think it was 1 or 2 days after we had signed Jair Alexander, and he was talking about the 6 a.m. workouts, and he said, like, we locked that door at 6:01. And you could hear and see the internal mechanisms in his own brain about, like, does it really matter? I don't know, but it does matter, because like 6 a.m. is the time. And if you're going to do this stuff, you got to be here at 6 a.m. Like, that matters. And to me, when I heard that, I kind of flashed back to this memory of Ed Reed talking, I think it was with Joe Buck, about, you know, just dissecting his career, talking about sports. And he's talking about the little things matter, and players picking up their towels after a game instead of just throwing them on the floor. And it's like all these little things really matter. So that level of accountability really kind of like stuck out is this is something different.
Yeah, I agree with that. And I think the on-field accountability I would point to is already been quite good. I think, you know, on the defense in particular, Roquan is there. Hamilton and Humphrey are both accountability people. Humphrey's very demonstrative on the field in terms of accountability. And I think most of the players, they want you to be in the right spot. They're angry with players who aren't in the right spot. I think back to Chuck Clark, I think this has not been something that's missing, you know, how he took Earl Thomas to the woodshed, you know, basically ran him right out of town for not knowing the playbook, not really being at practice and whatnot. I think the Ravens have a good culture of that. And it's always best when the players are policing themselves, and it doesn't have to be Harbaugh policing bad work ethic players, or even, you know, players who are making mistakes on field. The other players policing that is an ideal situation.
Yeah, Earl Thomas really ran himself out of town. Chuck Clark just kind of put a flashlight on it, but I agree.
All right.
What's on your list?
I'll pick the next item, which I think is depth of the team. I will say this team has a different level of depth, and they've got obviously really good top to bottom depth across that defense that has made some of the roster prognostication almost impossible to do, with an extra player seemingly in every position group that should have made the roster. I mean, they could have had two extra corners. They could have had extra safety. They had two extra inside linebackers, two extra defensive linemen, maybe even three, if you want to count Brent Urban in that group. They had two extra nose tackles. Edge rusher is the one place where, you know, they didn't have Malik Ham, and they were kind of forced into their last roster spot with Ajabo, but this is a very deep team. On the offensive side, they're plenty deep as well. They had sacrificed an offensive line position to keep Rasheen Ali on the roster, but they made big sacrifices across the roster to keep players where they were. I think if you look at these teams in terms of relative depth to the rest of the league, let's start with that. I think they're in a similar position to where they've been the last 2 years. They will need some luck to not be hit by injuries. That's very important. If you have a big depth advantage, the last thing you want is an injury riddled year where all of a sudden the one injury that matters kills the Ravens season.
Yep. I completely agree with that. And, you know, thinking about the depth and the luck with injuries, I think back to last year's, you know, playoff game against the Bill, and I'm like, would Zay Flowers have changed that game? Hard to like say confidently that, yeah, we win with Zay Flowers. It's also really hard to say that, like, no, we're definitely still losing if Zay Flowers was healthy. So the depth in my eyes is a big thing. And I looked at, also thinking about this, I thought about, for some reason, I was watching Rasheen Ali, and I was like, that's our fourth running back. Mm-hmm. There were years where, like, Bernard Pierce was our best running back, or Alex Collins, and, like, great players. They contributed those seasons, and it was, you know, hugely beneficial for the team those years. But, like, this might be the deepest running back room we've ever had. And there's other positions where I'm like, this is actually kind of impressive how deep these spots are.
Yeah, fair to say also that the Ravens had another very good draft in terms of immediate impact players. I think if you look at Starks, Green, Loop, Wester, and Peebles, all have a chance for immediate impact this year. And then they've got some longer-term guys. I mean, Buchanan is on the team. Vincent has made the team as well. I don't expect either of those guys to have a big 2025. Buchanan on special teams, but not in terms of playing linebacker. At least I hope not. And Emory Jones at some point is going to come back and play for the Ravens and hopefully be either a backup tackle or be a guard, but give the Ravens some much needed offensive line play in 2026, at least.
Completely agree.
I think it's your turn.
So another thing that kind of stood out to me is Jair Alexander. And everybody has a different term for this quality. Some people call it that dog mentality. Some people call it a chip. But what he's bringing to the table with being able to get under offensive player skin is something we haven't had in a very long time. The last example I can think of was Suggs, who had a very real impact on the game, just like Jair can. But he also had an impact on the mentality of the game, where a quarterback would think a little bit longer, or you know, an offensive tackle would draw a flag because he's getting chippy, you know. And Jair can do that very same thing with getting under a player's skin, which doesn't have this great demonstrative, quantifiable impact on the game, but there is an impact on the game with that.
Yeah, I guess going back further in terms of years, we might have called it swagger. The 2000 Ravens had a ton of swagger. Obviously, they had a lot of success, and they were a record-setting defense, and they knew how good they were, and they'd gotten by without much of an offense during the season, and they were able to you know, point to their successes, and they continued the turnover wrecking crew job they did throughout the AFC playoffs, and into the Super Bowl where they had a 5-0 turnover win as well. But you know, one of the places I'd like to see things show up more is I'd like this team to be more physical on the offensive line in terms of finishing blocks, because I think that's an on-field manifestation that you can actually draw some fouls from. So, you know, I don't even remember who made the block anymore, but one player blocked a Carolina player way over into the bench, and then he got a defensive player who wasn't on the field at the time to throw a punch that was a 15-yard penalty. It added that. I think the Ravens might have lost that game anyway, but it was still very efficient to do that. It looks like Carson Vinson really has that chip on the shoulder from the last two games. So I love seeing that. He's a kind of he had one like extracurricular bump where then he you know, somebody hit him after the fact, and he throws his arm up. He's like, what are you doing here? And then he had he's had several other pancakes where he's pushing somebody over another player. I love to see that kind of physicality, and if you're a block finisher, you got a great chance. And I'm a Daniel Fa'alele fan in general, but Daniel has not displayed that kind of finishing ability, and he should. He's got all the size and length to do it. I just would like to see more of that from him.
Agree. And in years past, we've had that. And bringing that element back to this offensive line, that could definitely light a fire. Because, like, it's so easy for that to create momentum. You know, you see one of those guys and the whole offense gets fired up from that. So I agree. That would be a great thing to bring.
All right, let me talk about one of the things from this year that I think is an improvement. They are practicing intentionally, as Todd Monken talks about it. He says, you know, that they, when looking at the offense, for example, they had a great overall result in 24, and frankly in 23 as well. But in 24, the second greatest offense in Ravens history after the 2019 team. The 2024 team was fantastic in aggregate, but they did a lot of little things wrong and a lot of other things right that were very large. So one of the potential gains that he saw was trying to, you know, get some of the bad things they were doing out of there and seeing how much aggregate the offense can improve from that. And the big thing that they've been working on all summer that I spent a bunch of time reporting on is trying to get the cadence more complex and more embedded within the current group of players they have. They do set and snap drills every single day. They only missed it one time. That was, I think, the day before a joint practice. Anyway, they missed it one time in all the practices I was at. That was 17 practices. So that set and snap drill, what they do is they don't even have their helmets on. They go to the line of scrimmage they go to the huddle. They call the play. Monken calls in on a radio directly into the huddle. Jackson or whoever else translates that play to the rest of the huddle. And then they go to the line of scrimmage as quickly as possible. And you want to be as quick as possible, get set as quickly as possible. Then they call their cadence normally, which may involve a one or two or three count, whatever it might be. They include the motion there, and they try and not make any mistakes during that. If that works out, there's potentially multiple levels on which you can be helped. So to start it, you're going to draw a few more defensive fouls because the defense is going to be offside if you're hard counting. And that's one thing that is well known. And some quarterbacks have fantastic hard counts. Cunningham was known to have one. John Elway, you know, quarterbacks like that. But there's other things you get too. The defense may give away scheme to you the longer and more complex your cadence is. So they may have somebody who's trying to fake the notion that they're blitzing off the slot, for example, and they may give it away during the cadence, and that gives you a chance to back off, recall your protection, and get it. You've got to get to the line of scrimmage early enough to make that change. And to do that, they really need to practice it the way they do. The other thing you may get is the defense may be more likely to just be caught on their back foot. So if you're trying to avoid offsides, neutral zone infraction, encroachment penalties, you can get the defense on their back foot. And particularly those pass rushers are not starting out of sprinter's blocks coming downhill at the quarterback and giving your offensive linemen trouble right from the first action. So I really love it. I love that they've committed to it. And if they have the same number of fouls, it would be a fantastic result. If they had a few more false starts, it could be still a good result because the gains on the other side are very significant. So I think they probably, if I had to guess, they'll probably have 10 or 15% more fouls, which might mean 3 to 4 additional false starts on the year. But I think the gains from it will be much more significant than that.
Yeah, to me, the biggest exciting thing about that is the opportunity for Lamar to get more information. And like, you know, there's a lot of Twitter fodder about like Lamar and what he's like, his passing and how, you know, cerebral he is in the passing game and like playing chess with the defense. But like, I don't really care about any of that, right? Like, even if Lamar just sees there's a blitzer coming and he's got an extra half a second to roll out, that extra half a second with Lamar Jackson is worth anything. Right. You know, it's so valuable for that man to have an extra half a second moving.
Offensively and defensively, I would look at that too. From an offensive standpoint, he may be able to move around that guy, make a play. From a defensive standpoint, he might be less likely to get hurt if you do that. And, you know, Lamar showed an ability at the line of scrimmage to move away and bark out new directions after observing what the defense was up to. He's really advanced his game in a number of ways over the years, obviously, but that's probably his most recent biggest thing is figuring out what the defense is giving him at the line of scrimmage. They've got to get there quickly to do it.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, before we move on, I want to step on a soapbox for one second. Coach Harbaugh gets so much flack for so much nonsense, but he is the one who stood up and said, nope, we have kicked this can down the road. We are not kicking this can down the road. And like, kudos, coach. Hats off to you, man.
I think it'll turn out to be a very good call. We'll see how far it goes, and we'll see if it really makes a difference, you know, at crunch time.
Yep, absolutely. So my last point, I think, is just the continuity in the coaching staff. There's a lot of unknown heading into the season last year with Zach Orr. Kind of a rough start, depending on how you look at it and where you assign culpability into it with the safeties and all the movements, all of that stuff. But I don't know that anybody can walk away from the end of the season and think like, okay, Zach Orr's our DC. I'll take that. That works. And having another off season where not only has he been doing it for a year, he's gained confidence. His players have only gained more confidence in him. So the trust is going to continue to flow. And then, you know, what becomes of that relationship and that dynamic is only going to continue to flow. And then same thing with Monken. You know, we saw iteration of year one of Monken's offense. And, you know, there was his tweaks and there was a lot of the Greg Roman playbook. And then year two, we saw a lot more of the Monken influence. And then year three, you know, it really feels like the training wheels are probably coming off here. You know, the amount of times I hear Dayton Wade and Tez Walker, and it's Tylan Wallace as well, making plays downfield. You always hear this guy had an incredible catch and that was the play of the day. But the amount of different names I'm hearing this season makes me think there's a lot more stuff going on and a lot more players being involved in what's happening and what's to come.
Yeah, so a lot to unpack there, but I love your last point is that basically you're distributing the football better. You have a lot of guys who can help you offensively, and I think that's certainly true. The Ravens have a lot of offensive weapons among their skill guys. Keaton Mitchell, you know, in some ways, I can't figure out how they're going to get him enough snaps because he's their most dynamic playmaker, it seems like they have on the entire field. That was true in camp. Zay Flowers will be terrific. Bateman will be terrific. Andrews, likely, they'll be terrific. It's not like they don't have a lot of guys. And of course, Derrick Henry would be terrific. But Keaton Mitchell is such a playmaker, such a carrier of misdirection that I think he's going to be extremely useful to this team. And Monken will find ways to use him. And I think they'll use Wester in some similar ways. They've got an opportunity to play fresh legs, which is really getting at what you're saying. If you distribute the football broadly and you can constantly be rotating fresh legs into the game, you can really tire a team down. Defense is especially the first unit to get tired in that back and forth, particularly if they have the same defensive backs and pass rushers on the field play after play after play. So I like that. And the other thing I wanted to say is about Orr in particular is if you're talking about like 360 feedback from Orr has not only earned the respect of the players in a big way, and he didn't have it from the two safeties last year. And it's a good thing they're gone because they really weren't buying into it for whatever reason. That may have been the reason they weren't playing well, but they weren't buying into it is enough for us to want them to be gone. His players now completely believe in him. His coaches have an unbelievable amount of respect for him. So Chuck Smith is the guy who's probably been most vocal about talking about how Zach Orr is really the person who turned this team around. Yeah, they brought in Dean Pease. That was some useful quality control and whatnot, but Zach Orr turned this thing around. He was the guy who figured out what wasn't working, made changes, and then they got it going. And the other thing that I think is the best example of this, obviously, Harbaugh is the one who put Orr in the role, and he had enough confidence in him that he tried to do the things to fix what wasn't working in those first couple of games last year, helped him in some ways. But you can see those guys really like working together. And after the Keon Martin touchdown, the way those guys were talking to each other on the sideline, you could tell Harbaugh treats him like a peer. He does have a reporting relationship there, but he clearly feels like Orr is going to be a head coach in the National Football League. That's what I took just from that exchange. It was a great moment because it was a great moment for Keon Martin, but it was a great moment because, Zach Orr and John Harbaugh really respect each other.
I mean, statistically, the odds are just in Zach Orr's favor that he's going to be a head coach at some point in time, right?
I mean,
DC's generally do end up becoming a head coach. So,
I mean, and the ones who've been super successful, I don't think anybody's not, right? So the guys who've been successful, if you go through the years, Lewis, who obviously went on to coach the Bengals for many years, Nolan, who went on to coach in the NFL years. Yeah, I mean, you have other guys who came out of the lesser ranks, like
Del Rio.
Yeah, Del Rio. Yeah. And then Rex Ryan, of course, came in and he became the guy. Who was the 2003? Oh, Nolan was still the guy in 2000 up through 2004. So you had Rex Ryan, and then they switched to Madison, who's the one guy who didn't have anything left in his career after that. They hired an older guy. So he wasn't a bad defensive coordinator. He's just bad when you compare him to the other great ones. Hall of Fame guys are Ravens have had. And then they got Pagano, and he made it to head coach, of course, very quickly after 1 year. And then they had Pease.
Yep.
And Pease was never a head coach. He had been a head coach once, I believe, before that.
But then he went to Tennessee to be a DC, and then a DC in Atlanta, or was he – quality control guy in Atlanta. I can't remember.
Honestly, I don't know. But then, of course, McDonald moved on and was a head coach. He's a young guy, and Orr, a young guy, has got many years left to coach in the National Football League.
It'd be an enormous
upset if he did not end up being a head coach at some point. We've got to really hope it's the first job after this. And when it happens, be happy for him and be happy for us, because it's going to mean 2 third round draft picks when it happens.
Yep, absolutely. And also, I'm still believing that there already is a plan for Harbaugh. Like, I don't know that it's set in stone, but the way we found out about Ozzy and EDC, and we when it switched, we were told, this was 6 years ago we decided this. Like, it wouldn't shock me if, like, those conversations, maybe there's not a date yet, but it wouldn't shock me if those conversations are already happening, that, like, coach, we're going to take care of you. We're going to keep you here. We love you. There's going to be a transition.
Well, he is there at 6 o'clock in the morning with Humphrey and the rest of the crew squatting 400 pounds. So right there, that'll tell you there's a guy committed to the physical responsibilities of the job. And I'll just tell you, at 62, and Harbaugh is a year older than me, standing up for 3 hours at practice is a It's a labor of love, but it's a labor. Believe me,
yep,
it's
absolutely
love what, yep. you, what you do.
Yep.
All right. So I get the last one, I think, here, right?
So yes, sir.
I'm going to say that the confidence to make coaching changes where needed, that they've been very clear about in the past, when they've had to do this, whether it's in season or whether it's to start the season, I think they've done a good job. So start with one that they didn't have a choice to make, and that's unfortunately when Joe D died, they brought in Warhop to be the head coach. It was a great move. It took a while to pay dividends, much like the Orr decision, kind of in that respect, is, and McDonald, for that matter, took a while to pay dividends, but it did. It certainly did pay dividends, and by the end of the year, Warhop had gotten that unit playing well together and not and cutting down on the penalties and doing a lot of things right. And certainly the running game had no legitimate complaint, nor did any part of the offense in terms of how well the offensive line played. So I think that was good. The changes in the secondary for this year, bringing in D'Alessio and Pagano in the secondary, I don't see any issue there with, you know, stepping on each other's feet in terms of responsibilities. And I like that. Pagano, I think he just kind of knows his role. They do seem to have him at the podium more often. But I think he knows, you know, what they're really expecting out of him in terms of supporting the organization, much like they asked Pease to do last year. Santucci, bringing him into the inside linebacker role. Not every coaching hire you make works out. So they brought him in to develop Trenton Simpson effectively. Simpson is kind of a disappointment last year, and they brought him in. I'm going to point to a past coaching hire that didn't work, and it's the kind of thing you need to make sure that doesn't make you stop trying to make good coaching decisions. And that was bringing in Rob Ryan to coach up Patrick Queen. Patrick Queen, in a lot of ways, was very difficult to coach player. I don't think he wanted, he had a kind of an aversion, he still does, to some physicality. But there is just, it's almost like a learning disability, be the wrong way to put it, because I don't mean that about him. I think Patrick Queen's a, you know, smart enough guy. I think there's certain things he doesn't really want to do or care to do well enough on the football field. And that was something that didn't work. And then also Rob Ryan was a complete mismatch in terms of trying to get somebody to communicate with Patrick Queen. If they had thought to give the job to Orr at the time, it would have been perfect in terms of you know, wanting to have somebody to directly coach there. And you could see it every time those guys would stand on the side while special teams is being practiced. Queen is not part of that. And Queen and Rob Ryan had these one-on-one sessions that would last 20 minutes. And they progressed from seeming like they had value to ending up Queen leaning on a tackling donut for a lot of them. There's body language that went with the crappy relationship that was very apparent.
I think the term you were looking for is business decisions. Patrick Queen makes a lot of business decisions often. And it's funny because when you said Patrick Queen and we're thinking, I'm like, I don't even know that I really hold that against Rob Ryan, to be honest with you.
Yep.
And I follow all the podcasts and all the stuff. And like, there's a lot of, just like Marlo has his own podcast. There's a lot of Steelers that do that. Cam Hayward has one, you know, one of the young offensive linemen that we liked, I can't remember which one, has one as well.
Frazier, maybe, or some, is that him, right? He was rookie last year.
It was the year before. McCormick. Was it McCormick last year? 2 years ago, right?
Sounds right.
Anyway, you never see Patrick Queen on any of them. It's not because he's like his address has changed and they don't have a foreign address. They're not inviting him onto it, you know? And like, it's, you hear the mentality of Steelers players in these podcasts, and like, we know what it is. We battle it, or it's, you know, we're fighting the same guys that are us, you know, but Patrick Queen is not that guy. So hard to blame Rob Ryan for that one.
And I don't think Patrick Queen ever really let the Ravens down in a playoff game, but he definitely let the Steelers down in a playoff game last year. And to see that on tape, if I were Patrick Queen, and I had to watch the film the day after, which he probably did not, because, hey, it was locker cleanout day, right? But if he had to watch that film with his teammates, he should have been freaking embarrassed. Yeah. It was as bad a performance as you can possibly have. Belichick went out of his way to bash him about it. But, I mean, just look, time after time, he's just not being physical at all. And I think it was his agent came out trying to defend him and saying he was sick. I mean, come on.
Even if you are, say anything. You go out there and you say, I messed up. I'm going to do better. Like, you take some onus or accountability, even if it's not you. You be a man and you go out there and face it and you say, yep, I'm going to, like, next year, you're not going to say this stuff. You know, it is ugly all around.
Great point. So I think this was a lot of fun. So we're done with our points that we had prepared for this. But I'll say this, that nothing is going to convince Ravens fans who have been hurt by this team over the Lamar era to convince them that they're going to get over the hump this year until it actually happens. And yet I'd say, if you're hoping for something, if you're a positive person who's looking for some hope why it might be different this year, I think we do have some legitimate reasons for you here. But if you're a Harbaugh hater, a lot of this, you know, has to do with John Harbaugh, his ability to bring coaches in, his ability to create new accountability. You know, we didn't talk about even the fact that they put up the screens in all the position rooms that have the scoring systems. I mean, that's another accountability factor that basically comes down from Harbaugh. If you hate Harbaugh, you're not going to agree with anything we've just said. That's basically the fact. You're not going to feel like there's any reason. Anything that the team does to get over the hump is all going to be based on number 8, and there's nothing Harbaugh can do to change it. I don't believe that to be true, but if you're one of the people who does look for hope, I think we've given you some reasons.
And to that point, man, like, I thought about this, and I was like tossing this around in my head. It's like, why are we even watching the games if we're not wanting hope? If we're not wanting hope that this is the year, what are we listening to this? What are we turning it on? Why is Pepsi making billions of dollars to sell us ads? If we don't want hope, why are we doing any of this?
That's a great point. And yet, you know, the vocal part of any fan base, including people like me, is putting their own team under a microscope at, you know, 30x, 40x and finding out what concerns we have. I mean, that's literally the podcast series I'm doing right now, is the concerns series. So, but it is natural that we would worry, but it doesn't mean that we're not hopeful. I consider myself to be generally an optimistic person. I love what the Ravens are this year. I just have this incredible fear of failure with regard to them in terms of having them not get the job done when the window is wide the hell open.
Yeah, man. Ever since that first San Diego playoff loss, when fans were cheering to get Flacco back in, I was like, dude, we have Lamar Jackson. We have a chance. And like, that's all you can ask for, man. Ask Cleveland. They'd be begging for a chance. They'd be begging for a chance. That's all they want. It's just a chance.
All 31 teams, except for the couple that are deluded by their own superstar quarterbacks, would really love to have Lamar Jackson. So
yeah, exactly.
We're the team that has him right now, so we're very fortunate. All right, Sean, always great talking football with you. Tell folks where they can hit you up online if they have questions.
I'm on X/Twitter at BMORE_SKY_HIGH. Follow me. I'm there.
All right, outstanding. Tag Sean in. I think you'll get really good football conversation. That's always been my experience over the years. He's been great on the draft, and I always appreciate these conversations. Other folks out there, if you're looking to be in on the concern series, hit me up right away because I'm almost to the end of scheduling those. DMs are always open on Twitter. Come up with one tight concern that you think could scuttle the Ravens season, and we'll talk through that and talk about, you know, what actionable ways there are that the Ravens can address those issues. Sean, thanks again for coming on.
Thanks, Ken. Looking forward to a long season with you, brother.
And we'll talk to you next time on Film Study.
There's nothing like being in the stands cheering on your favorite team. Game Time is your hack to unlocking amazing tickets in just a few taps. Plus, their Game Time guarantee means you can trust you'll get 100% authentic tickets at the best price. Fees are always included, so what you see is what you pay. Get the best deals on sports tickets. Download the Game Time app and create an account to start searching for tickets to upcoming games and events. Swipe, tap, ticket, go. Game Time.